When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mannequin Chill is back. We are a week out from the NFL draft, and it's kind of a dead period. We've gotten a lot of action in our Discord over the last couple weeks. A lot of people joining pre-draft to get help with their rosters and their roster construction heading into rookie draft season. Today, Shane, this is going to be a fun topic, something that you and I are constantly going back and forth on. We'll text about this, DM about this. It's context. Today's Mannequin Chill topic is going to be context. And the wide varieties of examples that we can give where context matters when it comes to dynasty questions, dynasty advice, dynasty analysis, and everything in between. So we're going to give a lot of examples of where context matters. I have some things in mind that I see constantly from the Discord members asking questions. And it's no fault of people when they ask a question without context, or they're almost just ignoring the underlying basis or principle of what they're asking. So we'll give some examples of that. But let's get into what context means to you. We say it all the time. There's no context to that question. There's not enough information. But what does that mean to you when you reply back to somebody, hey, I need some context as to why you're asking that question or why you're wanting to make the trade? So how do you define that?
You know what's interesting? So I just did a Shane Says episode, mispronounced my own show. What I thought was funny is before I started doing the show, I'm like, let me go check out a trade calculator because I wanted to see the difference in a start 9 versus start 11. And I couldn't. Every major trade calculator that I went to didn't ask you how many starters there were. So that's context to me. That's critical information that we need in order to make an informed decision. And when you don't give that context to start, what I think and what that makes me think of is that you might not be, not you specifically, but if you're asking me a question without providing any context, you might not even understand the importance of the context of your league. And that's not to belittle anyone in any way whatsoever, but it's important that you understand how a start 9 versus start 11 matters. What does 1.5 tight end premium mean against, versus 1.75? A lot of times we ask for context and then people will give me their whole roster, which, okay, you know, I need some of that information. But more importantly, I need your league settings, league scoring, and things like that so I can actually make an informed decision.
Yeah, I mean, we've tried to drill it down on our Hammer streams and on our Tuesday streams to really drill down what's important in the question. You know, the number of teams, the number of starters, any format or scoring changes that are important, and then just list as much relevant pieces or as many relevant players as you think need to be included. Sometimes people go overboard and they list their entire team. Sometimes we definitely don't get enough context where people only list a couple players. We don't know what their roster construction looks like. We don't know anything about the other teams in the league, and that's okay. We don't need the entire breakdown of the league because we don't have time to answer that with every question. But I do think it's important to really think about when you DM Shane or DMI or post the question in the Discord, think about why you're asking the question. I get it. You want an answer. You're clearly a dynasty player that's joined the Discord. You're in the trade chat. You're in the general chat following along. And you go, you know what? I want to ask a question. And that's fine. It's fine for anybody to ask whatever questions they want. But if you really want to learn and become better so that the next time when I give you the answer or Shane gives you the answer or the dozens of people that literally fill in when we're not there and they'll chime in with their opinions. And there's people just as smart as us in there literally preaching the same type of process. And I can't even count the number of times where I've read a response and I go, that's what I would have said. So there's no reason for me to do anything but like it or just go, good answer, whatever it might be. But I think it's important to understand the why. When you ask a question, what is the why? And I'm going to start with this. This is an example that I think it happens a ton. And I'll get a random message or I'll see somebody post a trade, Shane, and it's, Shane, should I give up Zay Flowers or the 111? And there's no context to it. There is zero other reasons as to why I might want to pick or why I might want a receiver or what my league market is on picks or what my league market is on Zay Flowers or whatnot. And it's just one or the other. Now, would you say that is probably a trade that is fairly close?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
So if I asked you that question, what is your response going to be as somebody that has seen 50 questions similar to that? I'll give you mine. Mine is just, I kind of just throw my hands up and go, pick a side. You like today? You like B tomorrow? You like exactly. heads yesterday? Tails today?
Super player takey. And like you said, in 4 days when you ask me, my mood might have changed on a specific player in that range. Because quite frankly, there's not that much to differentiate between the players and the picks in that certain range. So today I might like Devonta Smith because he signed an extension. And in a week, I'll go back to liking Zay Flowers more because I got good camp news. Although I don't think they have camp next week, but you get the point. Yeah, when it's those 50-50s, it's preference. It's all it is. I'm basing it on nothing but preference at that moment.
Well, and how does somebody typically get to the point where they ask the question? They've probably, if I told you Zay Flowers or the 211, would anybody in our community ask that question?
I would think not, no.
So they've probably already ran it through their head or ran it through a trade calculator or ran it through somebody else and they go, ooh, that's close. That's a close deal. Or you get a trade offer, you haven't immediately accepted it or rejected it. So in your head, it's close. So now you're really just looking for what? Affirmation. You really want to trade away Zay Flowers. You'd love to get a draft pick. You don't like him. You don't like his profile. You don't like the Ravens, etc. So you want to make the deal, but you want one of us to say yes or no. That's not really the type of analysis we're going to specialize in. We're not going to say heads or tails. We're not going to give you A or B, unless it's just such a no-brainer that maybe you see something totally different in the market that we do. That's a different score. Now, when you add in the scoring, the format, some of those things could change a little bit as well. And then you get into the context, like we were talking about earlier, of, well, okay, can I add that draft pick easier to move up to get a quarterback because my best quarterback is Bryce Young and I don't have a second one? Maybe the 111 is the better option. But without knowing that, there really isn't a way to answer the question other than, and a lot of times I don't respond because there isn't an answer. I don't know.
I give a response. And again, it's just player take. So I got to be honest with you. If you're asking me a 50-50 question with no context, it's just player versus player, pick versus player in a similar range, you might as well not even ask me. Just go with your gut, to be quite honest with you. Because again, it's a 50-50 shot.
Or what is your gut? Post your gut feeling. And right. If you're like, I really feel good about doing this, then do that. You don't need Shane or I to tell you, go ahead and do it.
Now, I will say there are more than a few times people will be like, oh, cool, that's what I was thinking. Or they'll go, oh, wait, really? You know what I mean? And then they might follow up and go, well, this is why I was thinking the other thing. So I will say that. But that's not every time.
Let me ask you that, though. If somebody really came to you and said, man, I really would love to get a draft pick for Zay Flowers, and then you happen that day to go, take Zay Flowers, they may listen to you because you just randomly threw out heads or tails, right? But their gut was saying go the other way, but then they don't make the move. And I almost don't want to be the person that is putting my reputation or my process on the line for a 50-50 bet. You know, like, I think there's people that would listen to you when you just said, yeah, sure, go with heads. You know what I mean? And you're going to have a more enjoyable time if you follow your gut. Those are not the kind of questions to ask without really putting out there context or what you actually want to do. So I almost don't want to answer them, Shane, because I feel like if it's the opposite of what you're truly thinking, you're going to listen to me on something that I'm no more qualified than. You could put a poll up on Twitter. It's just as good as the answer that I'm going to give you. Like, that is not why I am here. That is not the type of analysis that I am the best at delivering. So it feels like I'm actually doing people a disservice when I answer those questions sometimes.
No, I was going to say, you know, you brought up the trade poll. That's actually not a bad idea. You know, just to see, and you don't have to obviously live or die with what it says, but just check out what the wisdom of the crowd is. You know, there's hopefully the poll will get more than 200 people, so you get a good data source there, and it's not just people randomly clicking A or B, which could sometimes happen. You know, the more votes there are, the more that takes that out of the equation. So that's definitely one of those things. Like, I'm fine with doing a Twitter poll there, but at some point too, you got to make a decision for yourself, right? And if it is just a player take thing, go with your gut, man. Like, honestly, you shouldn't be polling every trade. I understand there's some trades where, and it's usually when it's not one for one, unless it's cross-positional. There are some trades where it's like, man, I need to workshop this. And I get that. And there's nothing wrong with that. But work to get to a space or a place where you don't need to workshop crowdsource every trade.
If you're going to ask those kind of questions, be thinking a couple moves ahead. Because that sometimes will give you the answer that we're not going to be able to give you because we're not thinking two moves ahead because we don't know the context. So it comes full circle. I got another one. Should I trade away Kyren Williams for a 25 first? No roster, No context, no format, nothing. Zero. Don't even know if it's super flex or single QB. Now, you and I would probably go, well, Shane, I could give you a scenario where you would trade away Kyren Williams for a 25 first. I could give you one where you would say I would buy him for a 25 first. So right there, without any of that logic, you have to be thinking, what is the plan if I make this? If it's just, hey, should I do it? Should I trade away Kyren Williams, Scott? Is he going to smash this year? Beats me. I don't know. He could. And he could not. So just thinking a couple moves ahead about, okay, what can I do if I make this move? Or what can I do if I make that move? And then decide your answer is going to lie in there. We get a lot of questions about going after hammers. This is Mr. Hammer. Shane is Mr. Hammer. It's always hammer hunting. Chase the hammer. Go after the hammer. Go get yourself a hammer. But Shane, what if somebody brings to you a question and they can get a hammer, but then you look at the deal and it's like, man, you're having to give up a lot and it's already a thin team. I know you're getting a great deal on Justin Jefferson, but it's a 12 team start 12 point per carry, two tight end league, and you have six assets. Now you're getting Justin Jefferson at 90% of the price that he should go for, but you're giving up Garrett Wilson in the 107 and you have nothing else, including one quarterback. How do you respond to people that are asking about tearing up? You don't really have enough information, or maybe you do, but they can't get there. It's a good deal, but they can't get there. How do you respond to those?
So, you know, and I've been in this situation because, yes, I'm the dude that's like, always get the best asset, always get the hammer. It's going to make up for everything. It's going to paper over everything. It's like putting that wallpaper. Is that what it's called? Wallpaper over a hole in the wall. It's going to be fine. You're not going to notice it until you throw something at the wall and then it goes right through there and it looks like Shawshank Redemption, right? What happens almost every time you ever do that, if your team is thin and then you consolidate to get another hammer piece or just a hammer piece in about a year, if that, you're going, all right, what can I trade this for? What's the best package I can get for it? You know, there's context to it. There are times when this doesn't fall into that category. Is it a start eight? Is it a start nine and you have five assets and some okay assets? Okay, that's a little different, right? Because one, I talk about this all the time. One player has an outsized impact on there. In your scenario, I've been there where it's like 12 teams start 12 and I'm like, I don't care. I'm paying up for Justin Jefferson. 4 months later, we're 4 weeks into the season and I'm getting my doors blown off because I'm starting Mac Hollins. Probably not the best idea to move for Justin Jefferson just because I wanted to bump him up in my portfolio. Maybe that wasn't the best idea. So I will tell people like, no, you can't do it. You cannot afford it. Don't do it. Like you should be trying to go the other way. It's like an accordion is how I think about it in my head. You should be trying to expand your assets. You should be trying to, can I split things? And eventually you'll get to the place if you do that enough and do it well enough where you can consolidate. But no, you can't do it. You just can't. You got to have some discipline, right? And that's one of the things that I did have problems with sometimes is having the discipline to go, you know what? That's a great deal, but it doesn't make my team better. You know, it makes this one position better. Yes. So instead of losing by 20 every week, I will lose by 15 because my team is just not good enough to compete if I do this.
This topic is very crucial to why roster construction matters, because you can make up some of that deficiency with good roster construction. You a little weak at running back, you a little weak at quarterback, you can make those up with volume to an extent. You can get by probably by a couple spots. But a lot of our subscribers and listeners are playing in start 11, start 12 leagues. And it just doesn't make sense to ever really be looking to go in that direction when you only have seven or eight pieces. And I think the ones that are the most obvious, Shane, are when I only have two good players. Well, obviously, you can't afford it there. You are literally having to take your two best assets and split them into four assets. Future picks, and quite frankly, a lot of times, the further out the assets are, the better. Because I don't care what happens in the short term time-wise, and I'm usually getting a better time value on a 26 first versus a 25 first. I think where people get into trouble, though, is in a start 10, they have seven good pieces, and that's it. And they're still tempted by, man, should I tier up? And you know what? The answer, again, comes down to context. This is another context question. How easy is it to buy replacement-level pieces? Are you willing to dip into your future picks to go backfill that extra starter that you just traded away? So I think having that type of context or analysis is really important. At the same time, I want to ask you a question about this asset survival bias. Meaning, if I told you your team has, just hypothetically, you have zero chance to make the playoffs until 2026. So two more seasons, 0% chance of you making the playoffs. What type of assets would you be comfortable saying, I do not care if they sit on my team for two more full years? How many players right now will survive and thrive at their current value uninterrupted for the next 2 years? 2026, you are looking at these guys as first two round startup picks. How many players do you think there are? And how many are not even in the league yet? Probably a third of those aren't even in the league, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably four of those guys that are in the draft this year.
Well, let's even include this year's draft. Yeah. I'm thinking 2025, even 2026 draft that are not even here yet that will potentially be making up those top 24 players. But just assets where you say, I don't care if I have a nuclear rebuild. I'm fine carrying them now, and in 2 years, they'll be the same exact thing.
So
I think even the Chase Jefferson Lambs don't even fit that category, because when they're 26 or 27, they're not the same as they are today.
We've already seen that with A.J. Brown. We've already seen that. A.J. Brown's about to turn 27, and all of a sudden, he's taking a dip. It's funny because he scored 0.6 points per game fewer than the previous year. Last year, and people talk about him like he was the wide receiver 30. He was
not a production thing for any of those guys.
When he's they're 26 or 27,
they'll be less desirable. Yeah. They just will be.
I'm old enough to remember when 28 was old, but anyway, not many. I mean, quarterbacks is really the only one I can think of. A couple wide receivers. I think Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison, obviously. So we'll give another 4, 6, 10. I'll go 10, maybe 12.
Clearly, you can't be confident on the Herberts, the Burrows, the Kylers, those guys. I'm not even sure I'm confident in the Josh Allens or Jalen Hurtses in 2 years. To be exactly what they are, uninterrupted, they're still going to be good. All those guys are going to still be good. If I have Jalen Hurts or if I have Josh Allen especially, I have a piece I can go and tear down if I want. Whereas if I hold Josh Allen, I'm not probably taking a ton of risk for at least another year. But 2 years? Feels like a lot can happen in 2 years where you go, man, Josh Allen used to be the QB1 for 5 straight years, and now he's not. And I like him still, but he's QB6 or QB5 in Dynasty. And man, it's hard to tear off of him now because he's more of a value than he was 2 years ago.
Two players come to mind when we think about this. Odell Beckham Jr. and Michael Thomas. Both were, I don't know if Thomas ever got the wide receiver one in ADP, but both of them were like up there. Odell definitely did. And then 2 years later, they're just not, because it one injury, two injuries, don't produce for a year, produce for 2 years. And all of a sudden they turn into, and they've never recovered, but that's more of a production thing, but they never recovered. But it happens that quickly. Like insulation might last a year for most players. It's not lasting for 2 years though. If you have injury and a bad year, for most players, you're not going to be insulated.
And that's a scary thought. If you have a team where you say you're looking towards 2026, 2025, you may be starting on your way back up, but 2026 is going to be your year. Yet you have a couple, I mean, you may not even have anybody in that tier, but you have a guy or two that's in the tier below where you're thinking, oh, Puka Nacua, Amon-Ra St. Brown, those guys are going to be fine in 2 years. Well, you know, I can give you a lot of examples of guys that, I mean, I'm not saying they're Amon-Ra St. Brown, but, you know, there are other receivers that primarily were slot receivers, Shane, that dominated until they didn't. Until they took 7% less, and now you're going, I don't know if that guy's elite anymore. So I just think it's very interesting with the survival bias on more than a year out of assets to where, you know, yeah, I would love to be stuck with, I mean, and you hear it all the time, Shane, I'm ripping my roster apart. I have nothing, but I'm going to build around Patrick Mahomes. I may be able to contend in 2027. And by then, Pat Mahomes is 31. You know what I mean? And that doesn't mean he's going to be worse. It's just, he's not going to be looked at as a building block core piece for sure in 2027.
We don't play in three-year windows, right? Like a three-year rebuild is it used to be a thing. I will give you that. It is not a thing now. If you're planning on building and it's planning on it taking you 3 years, your team is awful. And if it does get better, it's probably going to be more by happenstance than anything. Three-year rebuilds should not be a thing. You should be planning on it 2 years at most, this year and the next.
Would you say, if you were even murmuring the words, I'm at least 2 years away, would you say it's almost okay to just not even have any players?
I don't like being 2 years away. I don't know.
I mean, a team where you're so gutted now, you only have two assets.
We're just talking
for the next year, you need to be splitting five times until you have seven assets. Then next year, you're going into a team where you only have seven assets. So you're clearly not contending next year. So you are a firm, I need two more full seasons before I can even dream of being a Final Four team in my league. Would you almost say I don't even need any assets?
Yeah, I mean, in that situation, yes.
Because that excludes even like rookie picks this year.
Right.
Or would you start with guys this year? How would
you
play it?
I want rookie picks this year. I'm trying to get every rookie pick I can in out of this class because it's a great class. And if I really want to be good in 2 years, next year, that's to me is 2 years, not 2024, 2025. That's 2 years. I need a ton of these rookies. And then in 25, I'm really going out on a limb here. Then I could add a bunch of running backs in that class, but that's a whole other story.
It helps when you have an active league as well. But when the time comes, you almost have to look at future picks as I don't view it as a one-to-one, but it's pretty close. If I have seven future firsts, I have to almost look at that. Like if I wanted to, I could turn that into seven steady starters, maybe not studs. If I wanted three studs, I'd probably have to give up six of my firsts. I'm putting them like one for one as if it's a start 11, but I have nine future firsts. I'm okay if I only have five good players. Like I can make it work. It's just a matter of finding the time to actually go forward and make it work during 2025 or 2026, et cetera. What about the people that ask the questions about tiering up? And they probably ask you, Shane, I have a chance to buy Ja'Marr Chase here, and they just can't stomach to pay that price. You know, they have to give up their Drake London and the 105. And that's the deal. There's no negotiating. There's no getting a second back. Nothing. That's the price. In their gut, they're going, oh, man. They're immediately, when you have that deal, the rose-colored glasses for you come on with Drake London. Man, what if he smashes and I also gave away the 105 and I lost that deal? But what about the people that are hesitant to do anything that is against a leverage trade or anything that is against the process that we typically preach?
One, I'm assuming you actually have the assets to afford this, right? You have the 105, obviously, Drake London. But if they're making this deal, you're not going to be like, oh, who am I starting? You're not starting Mac Hollins. Let's just put it like that as my example again, who I had to start a bunch of times in a start 12 last year. You're paying for getting rid of the risk is what you're doing. Drake London could be a top 10 wide receiver. We haven't seen it yet. He hasn't been better than a wide receiver. Check the math, like four, maybe a wide receiver three off the top of my head. I don't remember. I don't think he's been better than wide receiver 40. So part of what you're paying for, though, is getting rid of that risk. The 105 could be Drake May. It could be Brock Bowers. Could be Roma Dunze. All those guys could be great, but there's still a risk. You know what there's no risk of? Short of injury. Ja'Marr Chase being bad. And even if his, like we just discussed, his price will drop or his value will drop in the next 2 years or in 2 years, because he'll be, I can't believe I'm saying this, he'll be 26, 27. He'll be getting old. You still know that he's going to give you monster production, even if the trade value isn't there any longer.
I think that's a very pertinent message right as this video is coming out, right before the NFL draft. Because the rookie picks are at almost an all-time high at that time right before the draft, right before people are so excited for all the perfect situations to land to where every one of those picks is worth exactly what we thought it should be and more. And then when the draft gets here, we're going to start placing players into those slots and we're going to clearly go, we're going to start changing the narrative on those picks. So what's your final piece of advice?
So I would just say you don't have to do everything all the time. Like you should stick to the process most of the time. But if you want to deviate it from like 10% of the time, and if you want to just keep track of when you've deviated from it, so you know the next time it comes, you go, all right, I'm not going to deviate again because I just did that last year and I don't want to get too asset poor. And I say, just do it.
I think something to consider before you ask questions or before you come to us with one of those trade questions is think about the move ahead, like I talked about earlier. Think about the opportunity cost of either doing the deal or not doing the deal. Something we don't discuss a lot. If you have a trade offer where you're getting Pat Mahomes and it's not an egregious overpay, think about it from the perspective of, Clay always says this sometimes on streams, is when else is Pat Mahomes going to be in your inbox? This may be the only time in the history of the league. In fact, if that person is sending you an offer with him, they're probably sending another person an offer with him. Once he's traded, you're not probably getting an offer from the manager that just traded for him. He's going, yes, I have Pat Mahomes the rest of his career. So this may be the one opportunity for you to get this type of deal. Now, is it the perfect deal? No, but if it's something where you go, I can live with that, you have to weigh the fact that this may be the one opportunity for me to make this move. And is the opportunity cost something you want to factor into that trade? So think about that. Think about the why behind the question you're asking. So with that, we'll sign off. Check out everything at destinationdevi.com, patreon.com/allgas to join the community. Trades in 5 streams every Tuesday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern on the YouTube channel, and Wednesday nights, the Hammer Streams with Clay and a guest. Check those out if you don't tune into those regularly and you're only tapped in on Tuesday nights. So with that, Manic and Chill is out.